This is Spokane Public Radio, and it is March. March, which opens with the Welsh National Holiday of St. David's Day, and then right in the middle of the month is St. Patrick's Day. We have a floating crowbar kids concert, our great local Irish band coming along this Saturday. So it's definitely a time to think of those islands, and certainly Ireland in particular. We have two very strong connections between Spokane and Ireland. One we'll talk about in a minute, but one is the connection that you've already come to know through the piano bench. Dr. Archie Chen, our own Spokane native, and his wife, Rona Goldson Chen, who now live in Spokane, are also director of the Piano Academy of Ireland. And they've been doing that at a distance and working between here and Ireland over the last year. And they have coming up in the middle of this month, appropriately aimed right towards St. Patrick's Day, the festival, their annual National Piano Festival, the 11th National, which will be coming along. So that's the kind of thing we would be talking about on the piano bench on a Tuesday. But there's more. There is so much more appropriate to this month and this event. And something else that we're going to bring up is alongside that piano festival, there is a Limerick festival. Even though you have to be in Ireland to be in part of the piano festival, all people everywhere are invited to be part of the Limerick competition, which will conclude this Friday. So once you're inspired today, you can get busy and write your limericks. And we have one right here created by our own Jim Tevenin, in which he says, "A studious lad named Fannin, who was obsessed with practicing Hannon. His reward came one day when he was required to play a 12-note retrograde canon." So there we have a little good geeky public radio sort of a limerick. All these limericks, by the way, is pretty obvious, have to be about the piano, have to contain a reference to the piano, follow the traditional limerick rhyme and rhythm, certainly have no obscenities. Then they can be entered, and I'll mention this several times during this time we're spending, by going to the website, which is simply pianoacademy.ie. And now with that, let's find out, let's quit making up reality and find out what is really true and go to a gentleman who is in Limerick, Ireland, named Dr. Matthew Potter. Hello, Matthew. Are you there?
Hello. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Dr. Matthew Potter. And you do live in Limerick, Ireland, right?
I do. And I'm actually curator of the Limerick Museum as well.
Perfect.
So, I have quite a few connections with Limerick.
And we have that traditional connection that Limerick and Spokane are also sister cities. So let's just jump right to the chase of the fact that there's this wonderful place in Ireland, and there's also a poetic form known as the Limerick. What's the connection?
Well, I suppose just to recap slightly, in 2013, the Limerick Writers' Centre, whose director is Dominic Taylor, asked me to research and write a book on the history of Limerick, which is called The Curious Story of the Limerick. And the third edition of this book has come out since 2019. So in the course of my research, which is set out in the book, I discovered that the Limerick poem is associated with Limerick, but at the moment we don't know exactly why it got the name Limerick. There were a group of poets in 18th century County Limerick called the Meigh Poets, called after the River Meigh, and they used the Limerick format in writing poetry, and sometimes it's thought that they gave their name to it. But in actual fact, of course, the Limerick itself is of much older origin. It goes back to the 13th century, and it's mainly associated with the English language. But here in Limerick, we're very proud of the connection with the Limerick because we're the only place in the world that I'm familiar with which gives its name to a poetic form. And the other interesting thing is that the Limerick is one of the only, if not the only, poetic form that's indigenous to the English language. Most other forms of poetry, such as, for example, the sonnet, were borrowed from Italian and then other languages, Latin, French, so on. So I suppose the other thing that's of interest about the Limerick is that it has attracted some of the greatest writers down through the years. Some of the great luminaries of literature have written limericks. People like, of course, Edward Lear would be known as the father of the limerick, but also a number of important figures such as James Joyce, Rudyard Kipling, Robert Louis Stevenson. They were all involved in writing limericks.
And if we were to walk down the streets of the, of your city, would the average resident of your city be probably ready to recite their favorite limerick or make up one on the spot any more than anybody else, anywhere else in the world would?
Well, I suppose what they would be familiar with would be the term limerick for this particular form of poetry. And many of them would be aware that there is some connection between the poem and place. And in fact, there are a number of plaques on various buildings in Limerick which have Limerick poems on them. So there has been a lot of work done over the years to promote the connection between the two, the place and the poem. And but as to people being able to recite limericks, it's hard to know whether people in Limerick would be more amenable or more capable of reciting limericks than people in other parts of the world. I would like to think so, certainly.
And what about in school? Do you think the kids, just because it's kind of fun or a silly thing for a teacher to do or an enjoyable thing, maybe the kids limericks?
I think one of the problems with the limerick traditionally was that it was associated with bawdy and vulgar sentiments. And I think for that reason, not merely in Ireland, but in all over the world, the English-speaking world, it didn't find its way onto the school curriculum. I think also because, as you say, it was regarded as being beneath the dignity of an educator to actually make use of the limerick. It has suffered a lot, I think, from the sort of the low company it has kept over the years, you know, because I think its connection with bawdy and its connection with vulgarity, and I think a few people have suggested over the years its association with the what they would have called the tavern and the public house. I think all of these have made the limerick slightly suspect, because I think there is a sense then that it doesn't enjoy the same status perhaps as other poetic forms.
Dr. Matthew Potter, who wrote this book, The Curious History of the Limerick, and who, by the way, is the judge for this particular limerick competition, which is causing he and I to have this conversation. Are limerick competitions, do they exist elsewhere other than this one? Does that often happen?
Oh, yes. Well, there's one organized annually by Dominic Taylor of the Limerick Writer Center. And it's an international competition, and it attracts entries from all over the world. And I suppose it's fair to say that Dominic Taylor and myself, we have done more than anyone in recent decades to promote the limerick. Although there were limerick competitions in the late 60s and early 70s in Limerick as well. And I suppose to some extent, the limerick, it's a prophet that's not honoured in its own land. It's probably better known in other parts of the world sometimes than it is in Limerick itself. And as I say, I think part of that problem is the fact that it was considered a sort of an inferior form of poetry. As a few people said, it's the poetic form of the people.
And
I think nowadays people would think that that's actually a plus, actually, that it's actually, because it's redolent of the ordinary people, I think therefore then it probably has more authenticity and more popularity.
You know, I think you've hit on something, because certainly in our world and in our time, I've seen just in the last 20 years in where we live, that poetry is generally on the ascendance and is on the rise, and there's a lot of young people doing poetry. Do you find that's probably true there too?
I think so. I think so. I suppose Ireland would have a very rich poetic tradition insofar as it was the principal art form in Gaelic Ireland before the Norman invasion and for long afterwards. And then, of course, in modern times, Certainly, W.B. Yeats is probably the most famous and the greatest Irish poet of all time. And not only was he the greatest Irish poet of all time, but he would be regarded as the greatest poet writing in the English language over the past 150 years or so. So I suppose there is that tendency to regard the Irish nation as being particularly talented in the area of poetry. And I think that there are many modern exponents of poetry in Ireland as well. It's interesting to note, of course, that while limericks are generally written in English, the Meg poets who wrote poetry in 18th century Limerick in the Limerick form, they wrote in the Irish language. And of course, it's often thought that the Limerick format is more suitable to English than to other languages, which is why it became popular, more popular in English than in other languages. But it's only interesting to note that the Irish language tradition of poetry also included the limerick.
And you have the, I don't know, I guess I would say unenviable position of judging this particular limerick competition that the Piano Academy of Ireland is doing.
Yes.
Now, is being a judge for a limerick competition purely subjective, or somehow are there objective criteria that you can apply?
Well, there are objective criteria in that there is a particular format for writing a limerick. First of all, it has to have 5 lines, and the rhyming scheme then has to be AABBA. So lines 1, 2, and 5 rhyme with each other, and lines 3 and 4 rhyme with each other. And then you also then have to have 9 syllables in lines 1, 2, and 5, and 6 syllables in lines 3 and 4. So that's the basic format. So that would be the first thing to look out for. If it doesn't, if a limerick doesn't conform to this format, it's not actually a proper limerick. And then the second thing, of course, would be to look at the use of language and to look at the sentiments expressed in the limerick. And because it's generally a witty, poetic form, the actual wit and the humour that's employed in the course of this of writing it is very important. So I think the format has to be adhered to, first of all, and secondly, then the actual language and the humour of the composition then is the second major consideration when judging a limerick.
And I have to presume that the final word of the limerick is probably the most potent an important word in the whole group.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yes. It's funny that the man who's considered to be the father of the modern limerick in many respects, even though he never used the term, Edward Lear, he had a habit of repeating the first line as the last line. And for example, there was a young lady of Norway who casually sat in a doorway. When the door squeezed her flat, she exclaimed, "What of that? This courageous young lady of Norway." Now, that would be regarded nowadays as a bit weak, that it's sort of cheating to some degree to repeat the first line again. But but nowadays, the punchline, as it were, is in the last line, which obviously couldn't be the case if it was simply recapitulating the first line again. And I'm just looking here now at a good example of a modern limerick now, one that's not particularly vulgar now, where the first line or the second line, the last line is actually the punchline. Where is it here now? Let me get one. Yeah, this is one of my favourite ones. It's by Clement Attlee, the British Prime Minister from 1945 to 1951 and architect of the British welfare state. And he was a man who was frequently underestimated because, of course, he compared unfavorably in some people's minds with Winston Churchill because he was a much more a low-key figure. But he was showered with honors. He became a Companion of Honor, which is CH, Order of Merit, OM. And he was then given a hereditary peerage and a knight. He was made a knight at Garter. And he described his career in the following limerick. He said, "Few thought he was even a starter. There were many who thought themselves smarter. But he finished PM, a CH and a OM, an Earl and a Knight of the Garter."
That's great. So that was the Prime Minister Attlee that wrote that.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a brilliant, I mean, you know, he wouldn't have been, he was actually considered by many to be a rather humorless individual, but I think that limerick shows that he was very far from being humorous. And but you can see how the punchline is in the fifth line.
Right.
And so I suppose just to mention again that this limerick writing contest is part of the Piano Academy of Ireland's 11th National Piano Festival, and the closing date is this coming Friday, the 5th of March. And the rules for the competition are: it must be original, it must follow the traditional limerick rhyme and rhythm, must contain a reference to the word piano or a synonym for that, and no obscenities. So that the latter stipulation might disappoint some of the potential competitors.
But it makes your job easier. That narrows it down a little bit more. Do you yourself have a limerick you've created lately that you want to conclude with?
Strangely enough, I have never written a limerick. I write about the poetic form, but I haven't actually ever written a limerick. But I would like to finish with a limerick myself, which is about St. Patrick. And it was written by a very good friend of mine, a limerick poet called Brian J. Slattery. And the poem is called St. Patrick. And it goes like this: St. Patrick is known far and wide for the shamrock and the Trinity inside. And his long coat of green could often be seen on his ass while having a ride.
And that actually, thank you, because that brings out the clever thing you mentioned, the low form of poetry and the no obscenities, but to just kind of imply or surprise that you're flirting with the edge of that is one of the trademarks, isn't it?
It is very much so, yeah. And I think a bit like a lot of the old style humor, I think it's more, it's funnier by virtue of being subtle.
Yeah.
You know, I think if something has to be blatant and it has to be in your face, I think it's not quite as funny. Whereas when it's implied, I think it's actually much funnier and more witty.
Absolutely. Dr. Matthew Potter, curator of the Limerick Museum and author of The Curious History of the Limerick, thank you so much for paying this quick visit to Spokane.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we'll continue. I'm going to take your voice away from us. You can. I'll keep you on the line if you want to stay around and hear any of the other limericks we're going to extend. But thank you very much for the time you've spent with
thank
me.
Thank you so much, then.
And so, once again, to submit your limerick by this Friday, you simply go to the website, and it's very simple and conceptual. You don't even need to write it down. It's pianoacademy.ie. That's the whole thing you need to know. Go to the website, pianoacademy.ie, and you'll know how to submit your limerick. Anybody, anywhere is welcome to submit to the. And it's a limerick contest. It has a brilliant prize of a artwork. The Northern Irish artist Helen McNulty has done that. And so that's for the limerick part. And then once you've gone to the pianoacademy.ie, you can get all the information for the festival, which will be on YouTube March 16th and 17th, with that wonderful connection between Spokane and Ireland. Dr. Archie Chin, Rona Goldson Chin, who are doing all of that. Now, we're not done. That is the specific part to that festival. But boy, do we have limericks. First, I'm going to start with the ones that Rona sent to me, which are some of the examples that they've received, just to kind of get you going. Here's one: my piano sat gathering dust, but my mother said, practice you must. So I started off slow only 2 years ago. Now my skills are what earn me my crust. Also British Isles, and yet Good teaching tool, that one. Here's another one. If playing the piano while drinking, it's wise to confine all your plinking to the pale scale of C, where no flats or sharps be, thus hedging your chances of stinking. Okay. A most famous pianist called Fred practiced on keyboards in bed. He loved playing adagio, but his tux stank fromaggio. He performed in his PJs instead. And the other one has, I'm going to not do that one, but here's a not original one, but a good example. There once was a guy on the keys who played whatever he'd please. His jazz was so hot it would burn on the spot, and his blues were so cool they would freeze. Okay, that's what Rona sent me, a representative of some of the entrants they've gotten. She said they've gotten a lot of great entrants, but always room for more. Now, you need to know that in Spokane, we have the D&D, we have the Limerick Kings, and that is Dan Webster and Dick Warwick. Dan Webster, you know, is the host of Movies 101. You hear him every Friday night. And Dick Warwick, the cowboy poet of Rosalia, or of one of those Palouse towns, and who also has done a lot of Australian poetry and participates in the annual Cowboy Poetry Festival in Nevada and many things. And they are a Limerick duo. Dan Webster, when he was working full-time for the Spokesman Review, started an annual Limerick contest in the newspaper, which lamentably is not still happening. But here was the sequence of piano limericks that they created for me since yesterday. Dan opened with 88 keys, black and white, make music that gives me the right to claim concert fame, to earn me my aim of playing like Mozart tonight. Thank you, Dan. As answered back by Dick Warwick, my piano is small and electric, making notes that are often quite syntactic. One fine virtuoso said, it maketh me oh so distraught, angry, and apoplectic. Okay, then Dan came back. Let's see where we have it. This is not quite all the facts are accurate, but who cares about that? Vern was a small city mayor who dreamed of being a player, on stage or off, a real Rachmaninoff, whose piano was his means of prayer. To which Dick replied, a pianist, and I'll be sorry for my not good Irish pronunciation. A pianist who lived in Dún Laoghaire often played until he was weary, but Miss MacLeod's reel, he said, make him feel upbeat and exceedingly cheery. To which he also entered, a pianist surnamed O'Connor was accorded a prestigious honor. When he played Vicar Street, the crowd rose to its feet, though ragtime was his chosen genre. And then let's see, he couldn't stop himself, so he has a couple more. He has one more here. Here's our final one for the radio. We relish the fiddle and bow, and the Irish harp dulcet and low. Tin whistles are sweet with the Boudrin's deep beat, but I love the Pie Annie O. Okay, thank you, Dick Warwick. Thank you, Dan Webster, for your set of limericks. The rest of you who are quickly scrawling limericks, remember, all you have to do to enter is go to pianoacademy.ie, and the deadline is Friday for that.